You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis brought to you by Draft. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, BreakingFootball.com. Follow me on Twitter, at MichaelKistNFL. I will be joined momentarily by my co-host, Benjamin Solak, the best co-host in the game. Follow him on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. He does his work over at Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. We are going to be doing a crossover episode with Aaron Freeman from Locked On Falcons. You can follow him at FalcFans. That's FalcFans. Also follow Locked On Falcons at Locked On Falcons. And we're going to kick it right over there, man. We had a good time talking with Aaron. Let's get to that.
So, guys, welcome to Locked On Falcons. I'm glad to be a part of the Locked On Eagles podcast as well. Let's jump right into this matchup. This is going to be a very interesting game between the Falcons and Eagles. The Eagles have the great honor of playing the Nobody Respects Us card this week because they are the number one seed, but they are an underdog. In terms of Vegas, do you feel like that is going to be something that's going to make this team a little bit hungrier than they would have been under different circumstances?
Yeah, for sure. And it's definitely been bulletin board material around Philadelphia. I know Fletcher Cox has taken exception to it. It's just anything to get this team motivated for this game is a plus for us, because the emotional wear that we've had after Wentz has gone down, the uncertainty on offense, if that defense is extra juiced up and they already play much better at home than they do on the road, and they are able to perform at their peak and kind of keep the game within reach, man, anything can happen. And I think that's the path for victory if there is one for the Eagles in this game. Ben, what about you? What do you think?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to push back on you, Mike, because new favorite Philadelphia Eagle, Chris Long, he was asked, you guys are underdogs in Vegas. How does that make you feel? And in classic Chris Long fashion, he is the most just blunt, honest person I think I've ever heard interviewed ever. He just says, what would it sound like if I stood here and was like, man, I wasn't that motivated for this playoff game, but I just found out we're underdogs and nobody picked us on ESPN, so now I'm more motivated. I mean, it's just not the way we think. So while, yes, there's absolutely, that narrative for Philadelphia, oh, we're the underdog, we're the first seed, I think this team, nobody is terribly shocked about that. Like, obviously, they know what's kind of going on and they know what their situation is, number one. And then number two, this is a pros team, a lot of veterans, a lot of guys who've been through the playoffs before. I don't think they're too, we're underdogs and the Falcons are coming in hot. They're at home. They're a good defense. They're a good team. They know what they're talking about. They'll handle business.
Yeah, it's interesting to see sort of the tables turn on the Falcons, because they've basically been able to play that, no one respects us, no one believes in us card, going back to even last season when people expected them in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They were the highest scoring offense, but, the Seahawks and the Packers have been there, and this Falcon team is whatever. And even, the Super Bowl ended in not the best fashion. But I think that was also something that was able to motivate them going into this season, where it's like, well, we're getting disrespected. And to be going down the stretch, basically playing nothing but NFC South teams and really having to fight and scrap their way into the postseason, I think was a motivating factor. And then going up against the Rams offense last week, I think people were expecting the Rams to sort of take care of business, and that didn't happen. And so now all of a sudden, people are like, oh, yeah, well, this Falcon team was, 11 months ago was in the Super Bowl, so they are legitimate and good. And so it'll be interesting to see how this team plays with that dynamic. I don't think it's going to be a major factor in this game. I think this is going to be a largely defensive battle between these two teams. The Falcons really stood out last week going up against the number one scoring offense in the league and shutting them down and holding them 13 points. I think the Eagles defense is legitimate in this game. They're the better of the two defenses. And I'm curious, what are your guys' thoughts? Do you feel relatively confident with the quality of your defensive performance this week that they'll be able to sort of contain some of the star players that the Falcons have on offense?
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about this on our show as well, but the difference between the splits, the home and away splits for the defense as far as points scored, is the second largest difference in the league. We play much better at home, especially on against the run, where we're giving up 30 less yards on the ground per game at home. We have the noise as a factor as well. And I had a question for you, Aaron, that I just thought of. How important was it, and how much was your butt clenching when the Falcons got the lead against the Rams and then were pretty much able to keep them at an arm's length for the entirety of the game? Because was there at any moment that creeping feeling? Because, I mean, you know, the mental aspect of the game is a big one. That creepy moment for you were like, oh, man, like, here we go again type of thing.
Well, longtime Falcon fans know this, and you guys, no lead is safe when you're rooting for the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously, I'm sure you guys can think of some prominent examples recently where that proved to be the case, and sort of to see the Rams sort of get back into the game late in the second quarter. I think the Falcons have given up like the most points in the final 2 or 3 minutes of each half, or at least the first half of this season. So it just seems like whenever a team gets into their 2-minute offense, they're able to go down the field. And if the Falcons had any momentum at that point going into the halftime, they almost always lose it. They've been really struggling in the third quarters. They've been offensively struggling. That's typically the point in the game where opposing teams are also being able to move the ball most effectively against their defense. So it was one of those things. As usual, as a Falcon fan, it's one of those things where you're the Rams got some momentum. It'll be really important for the Falcons to come out in the second half and really take care of business. And they really did by basically relying on the running game. That was really the only thing that was effective against that Rams defense, because Aaron Donald was just terrorizing their offensive line in the first half. And it seemed like even on 3-step drops, he was in Matt Ryan's face before he hit his back foot. And so the Falcons really took control of the game with their running game, and that was sort of what finished off the Rams for me. And so that's something that was new and different that hasn't been the norm over the last year or so. And so that, you know, to answer your question, yes, there's always a butt-clenching moment for me as a Falcon fan. Just the state of being. You know, we always joke, me and other people that support this team, always joke on Twitter, like, okay, you got it before the game, you got to get a couple beers, get that aspirin ready for the heart attack that is definitely going to ensue by the end of the fourth quarter. Make sure you're taking your blood pressure medicine and all that type of stuff. So, but I think the difference between this team is, I think, because of the adversity they've faced last season, at the end of last season, and throughout the season, I think this team is more mentally prepared to handle that at this point in the year than they were earlier this season. And so I feel reasonably confident that when those instances occur, that this team will not sort of, you know, buckle under the pressure like they have done in past weeks and past years.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So actually, I want to push you on the faith aspect of being a Falcons fan a little bit further. And more specifically, I want to talk about Sarkisian, Steve Sarkisian, your offensive coordinator, because I know in the beginning of the year, obviously Kyle Shanahan leaves, incredible offensive coordinator. Now he's in San Francisco, and we know San Fran's offense was humming by the end of the season for sure. Sarkisian steps in, and it was definitely a rocky start for Atlanta. There were a lot of complaints. He wasn't getting Julio the ball enough. You know, he was a little bit confused as to how to deploy Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman, two good backs, how to divide up, you know, that stable there. Seems like things were starting to come along more so in the second half of the season. But still, for me, when I watch, you know, when I watch Atlanta games through, I see a guy who can script the opening plays really well in Sarkisian, and then when kind of you get off the script and you have to start coaching against the guy on the opposite sideline, he seems to often lose the battle. Now, obviously, y'all pulled it off against Wade Phillips and a good Los Angeles defense. It was a little bit injury plagued, but still a good defense. I'm curious, like, you know, Eagle game, of course, focused, but even for the playoffs, you know, 3 games potentially left if you're going to go all the way. Are you sold on Sarkisian here as the offensive coordinator for the Falcons? Like, obviously, you're going to be in a very hostile territory in Philadelphia, facing, like you said, you know, the better of the two defenses on the field. And then we know Philadelphia allowing very few points at home. You know, even considering that whole, you know, Falcons fans freak out when they have a lead because they can't trust it. Do you trust Sarkisian to be able to continue to call 4-quarter games through the rest of the playoffs?
You brought up an interesting point with Sark, and basically pointing out last week's game against the Rams was sort of different from what it's normally been. To answer your question, Sarkisian is the part of the Falcons that I have the least amount of confidence in. Okay. And typically this season, when we face quality defense like the Eagles, this team has struggled to score points. And my expectation for Saturday is that this team is going to struggle to score points. But one of the things that's giving me a little bit more confidence as of late is that Rams performance, where they got better as the game wore on, which is, as you said, has not really been the case at all this year. You're right. They're really good on the first 15 to 20 plays. And then at the point in the middle of the game, when they need to start making adjustments, they tend to struggle and sort of fade. And usually, you know, they might figure it out by the fourth quarter, but sometimes they don't. And also I think in the Week 17 game against Carolina, another sort of must-win playoff caliber atmosphere, they were able to make an adjustment knowing that they have a little bit of weakness on the interior of their offensive line. They're dealing with injury to left guard Andy Levitre. Bank Garland has replaced him in the last couple of games. He has had his ups and downs. Wes Schweitzer, their first-year starting right guard, has had his ups and downs this year, probably a few more downs than ups. And in that particular game, Alex Mack was dealing, the center, was dealing with a calf strain that really made him limited in that performance. And the Falcons knew going against a physical Carolina front with that really strong interior led by K.K. Short, that they probably wouldn't be able to run the ball effectively. They did not wind up running the ball terribly effectively. Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman combined for 22 carries and 46 yards in that game. But what they devised in that particular game, and I think this is going to be similar against this Eagles team because the Eagles also have a excellent interior led by the incomparable Fletcher Cox and have been one of the best run defenses in the league this year. What they did against that Carolina team is they relied heavily on throwing the football short, and they used their short and quick passing game to supplement the run game. And basically, instead of trying to run for 5 or 6 yards on any given down, they were throwing for 5 or 6 yards. And Matt Ryan wound up dropping back to pass, I think, 47 times in that game, which was the most he had this season. And I think what the Falcons will try to do, you know, I think they won't necessarily go into this game expect completely abandoning the run like they did in that Carolina game. They will try to establish the run early, test out this Eagles defensive line to see if it's as formidable as they think. But I do think they'll quickly, you know, sort of go off script a little bit with, you know, Sarkisian making that adjustment to rely on their quick passing game. And I think they've been effective over the last couple of weeks, over the last month, getting the ball out to their playmakers and allowing those guys to make plays after the catch. They've had instances where all their guys, whether it's Tevin Coleman or Freeman or Sanu, he had the big screen pass for 50 yards to really sort of seal the game against the Rams last week. Julio Jones, of course, is magnificent after the catch. And I think that's what they're going to rely on to basically attack this Eagles defense and make their DBs, make their linebackers have to tackle guys in space. And any sort of breakdown that happens, you know, eventually if you keep chipping away at that defense, eventually there will be a breakdown or so. And I think the Falcons will rely on that really to sort of spearhead their offense. And I think that's an adjustment that I'm a lot more confident at this point in the season that Sarkisian will be able to make because I've seen him do it at this point.
Aaron, so riddle me this. You mentioned Julio Jones, and I just dropped the piece on LockedOnEagles.com looking back at his tape and the things he does well. And then tomorrow I'm going to follow up with a piece on how the Eagles defended him in their game in 2016. But riddle me this, and I'm sure you've dealt with this at length with your listeners, but for the Locked On Eagles listeners, can you explain how the following is possible? This is a tweet that I put out today. From 2016 to 2017, Eagles tight end Trey Burton has as many red zone catches with 9, more yards with 64, and more touchdowns with 4 than Julio Jones has in the red zone. 9 catches, 55 yards, 3 touchdowns. How is that possible, Aaron?
It's one of the great mysteries of life. You know, who built the pyramids, all that type of stuff. It's one of those things where one of the things that Sark promised going into the season was they were going to get Julio more opportunities in the red zone. But one of the things that Falcon fans have noticed over the years, and myself included, is that really they're kind of more effective when they're not trying to force feed Julio Jones the ball in the red zone, because you assume that he's going to get all the targets and get all the opportunities. It creates opportunities for other guys. And so it makes defenses, or then instead of having to defend like one quarter of the field, whichever side Julio lines up on, they have to defend the entire field. And I think it gives other guys more scoring opportunities. And they've been a mostly effective red zone team over the last couple of years, using that strategy, not so much as of late. And, you know, it's interesting to try to figure out why they've struggled in the red zone over the last couple of games. But it is one of those things where it's baffling at face value, but for the most part, it seems to work out for them. So it's not necessarily something that I spend too much time worrying about.
Aaron, we've been hammering you, man. What questions do you have for us about the Eagles?
Well, I'm curious because I know a lot of Falcon fans are, you know, basically feeling very confident about this game because Nick Foles is starting quarterback. I'm curious sort of what is the confidence level with Nick Foles after a pretty promising game against the Giants? And then, if I recall his first start, sort of two lackluster performances against Oakland, and then, you know, for the quarter that he was in the game against Dallas in Week 17. I'm curious, what are your expectations for Foles? At least from my perspective, my expectation is the Eagles will basically borrow the strategy that they had in 2016, which is run the football and play great defense, and that's how they beat the Falcons, and basically tell Nick Foles to check it down as much as possible. Don't lose this game early in the game, and we'll play it, you know, we'll run the ball and we'll play great defense and we'll have an opportunity to win in the fourth quarter. I'm curious, sort of, do you feel like that's going to be the Eagles strategy? If it is, do you feel like Foles can do that, or however you feel on Foles?
Yeah, it's got to be their strategy. And if they're going to win, that is, like, you know, that's got to be the way they go. And I think he can execute it. Foles is, at his best, a passable executor of an offense. Something that we've talked about since he came in for Wentz. You know, this guy, a top five backup in the league. He's played poorly against the Raiders, like you said. That quarter against the Cowboys was pretty ugly. But he's still one of the better backups in the league. He's got starter experience. He's got playoff experience. I mean, he's 0-1, but he's still got it. You know, it's not going to be his first time, which is a wonderful thing. He can get an offense done. He tends to be shaky, inconsistent. His ball placement can be a little bit erratic. And if you're asking him to freelance, if you're asking him to handle pressure, you're in a bad spot. But if you can consistently run the football so as to strengthen the box, right, force the Falcons to go ahead and bring more guys in there, if you can play a physical brand of football with your offensive line, really move the Falcons' defense off the spot, and then after that you can work some play action with Nick Foles, allow him to take a couple shots down the field against one-on-one coverage, because he's pretty accurate down the field, especially throwing to the sideline. It's one of his strengths. He can execute an offense just fine. He can execute Philadelphia's RPOs. He can execute. The biggest issue that you've had with Foles going forward, as far as the past two games that were very poor, was you weren't getting the separation that you usually saw. You know, so that's an aspect of it. You weren't getting the protection you usually saw with Wentz. You know, left guard Stephen Wisniewski is out. That's an aspect of it. And then also, it's the guy's second start after being sitting on the bench for, you know, so long and so forth. He's still rusty, you know. I think he came out in the Giants game, looked good, and we kind of got a false understanding of what he could have been. That was really the greatest game he could have played, you know, in that context, I should say. He can pull it off. He can execute the offense. But yeah, right now, the confidence is not in Foles. It's in the other 21 guys. You know, this has been a very good, well-rounded football team that's won in a lot of different ways. You know, there have been games where, you know, Wentz has thrown for less than 200 yards, you know, less than 20 completions, and the Eagles have won by like 30. You know, this is it's a good football team with a lot of good players. So coaching staff, I would expect, and I think Philadelphia would hope, put their faith in the other 21 guys. Have the defense play a great game, run the football well, like you said, in that win against the Falcons in 2016. That was their formula. And then when Foles needs to execute, just give him a simple offense and the bare bones, and he should be able to execute.
Okay, I'm wondering also. This is more just a Hail Mary type of question, but what are your thoughts on sort of all the buzz around Jim Schwartz being in the running for some possible open head coaching spots, and as a Falcon fan experienced this firsthand with Kyle Shanahan last year, it seemed like, and it does seem like around the league you see this often, where the guy sort of has his mind on what his next position is as opposed to the game at hand. Does that concern you a little bit that maybe the defense, as good as it has been this season, may not play to its best performance this upcoming week?
Yeah, I think Jim Schwartz is totally focused, and he's not having his interview until after the game is over with the Giants. And also, my thoughts on the Giants looking for defensive-minded type coaches more heavily than offensive-minded coaches is kind of crazy to me, because you're pretty much banking on Eli Manning and that offense being, I don't know, passable as opposed to what it's looked like recently. I know Odell's been hurt and their wide receivers were hurt and all that stuff, but Eli is not getting any younger. And I think a full redo of that team might have to happen. But yeah, I don't think it affects the way that Schwartz is preparing for this game whatsoever. He's an experienced coach. He's going to come out with his game plan and execute it. I don't see him not being able to, you know, these guys don't need motivation like we talked about, like Ben talked about before, to get up for a game. So he's not going to have some big rah-rah speech like that's not going to be missing or anything. I don't think it affects this defense at all. Ben, what about you?
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. Schwartz is very, like, I don't think Schwartz is as interested in his future as a head coach as he is in, like, killing the guy opposite him. You know what I mean? Like, that's the impression I just get from him, Like, he's the, you know, he's like, I forget which game it was. It was 2016. The Eagles were up by multiple scores, like three scores. And it was like third and four at the 50 or something. And the Eagles got a stop. And he like freaked out on the sidelines. He was so psyched. It was like a great sack or something. I don't remember. I'm probably completely wrong with the context. But it was a very like low stakes play. But the defense executed it well and he went nuts. Yeah, he's just kind of more interested in like killing people than he is, you know, dealing with head coaching future. That's my impersonation of it. I'm not sure, you know. We'll see what happens. But yeah, I feel confident that Schwartz will have his guys prepared. Whether or not he gets a head coaching gig, whether or not he's interested in really, you know, going for a situation unless it's perfect, remains to be seen. I'm not too worried about him to the Giants. Like Mike said, I don't really think that has too many legs. We're gonna enjoy him when we have him. That's for sure.
So there's news today about the Eagles defense. It's around that topic, and I've got a question for you, Aaron, on this. New starting linebacker for Philadelphia, Danelle Ellerbe, who's been playing recently, filling in. He popped up on the injury report today with a hamstring, did not practice on Tuesday. We are going to be closely monitoring that situation because otherwise you're looking at increased snaps for Najee Good and more nickel packages against Falcons' base and heavy offensive sets with Malcolm Jenkins down in the box. So here's my thing, Aaron. If Ellerbe is a no-go, I am very concerned about the Falcons' running game, which, you know, based on that wide zone, but they'll bust out two tight ends and run power up your butt. And a quick stat, 8 games this year, the Falcons this year were running where running backs Devonta Freeman and Tevin Coleman combined for over 200 yards, and the Falcons are 7-1 in those games. Aaron, am I right to be kind of freaking out about this? Because I'm kind of freaking out about this if Ellerbe can't go.
I think it's a legitimate concern. My expectation, I don't expect the Falcons running game to feast on this Eagles defense because I think the Eagles defensive line is certainly good enough to sort of control the pace of the game to a certain extent. But I certainly think the Falcons are going to, you know, attempt, as I said earlier, sort of to establish the run and see if they can get themselves into some third and manageable situations. The Falcons have the league's top third down efficiency in the league this season. But what's interesting is they're extremely efficient on third and shorts, but third and longs, third and seven or more, they're closer to the bottom of the league in that. And so they really need to rely on sort of staying on schedule offensively. And I think with their running backs, with a guy like Ellerbe out, correct me if I'm wrong, but do they pull Ellerbe off the field in nickel?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank God.
I just wanted to check to make sure. I think really where you have to be concerned with the linebacker position, and maybe this may mean that Ellerbe's injury may not be as impactful, is in the passing game. As I said, in that Week 17 game, the Falcons threw a lot to the running backs, particularly Devonta Freeman, Coleman, and him to combine for 13 targets in that game. And so I do think as long as Kendricks and Bradham are in the game and being able to be asked to play in coverage, I do think the Ellerbe loss won't be as huge because I do think it's more likely that Freeman and Coleman have more receiving yards in this upcoming matchup than necessarily combined rushing yards. Now, I'm also curious, guys. My expectation with this game is, you know, as mentioned earlier, the Eagles are going to try to control this game on the line of scrimmage as they did in 2016. They dominated that game. A big part of that was Jason Peters. I'm curious if you feel confident enough that in Vitae's performance this season or in the other 4 starters on the offensive line now that Wisniewski is back, that they can sort of compensate for any deficiencies there. But do you feel good enough about this offensive line's ability to control the line of scrimmage and get a guy like Ajayi and LeGarrette Blount going?
Run game, yes. Vitae's a people mover. That's a big boy. And that was a strength coming out of TCU. That's been his strength when he's been here in Philadelphia. He can row and breed in a big way. And Philadelphia, very fortunate. You know, Vitae, not the best athlete, but if you go to left guard and everybody to the right of him, so the other 4 guys on the line, you got really good athletes at the position. Steven Wisniewski, who, if he's back to full health, that's great news for Philadelphia. He's been gimpy, if playing, for the past 3-4 weeks, and it's really taken a knock out of their run game for sure. And then with Kelsey at center, Brandon Brooks at right guard, and Lane Johnson at right tackle, that's probably the most athletic half of a line you're going to find in the NFL. And so fortunate to have this because they can run on you in a many different ways. You know, the power, zone, outside, stretch, inside, whatever they want against the Falcons of 2016, we saw much more downhill, down the throat, between the tackles style. And I think that, yeah, you're very likely to see that again for Philadelphia against this Falcons team. Very good defense, very athletic defense, but they're not the biggest defense, so that's what I would anticipate. And when it comes to the passing game, that's where the concern is. And obviously, you know, last year against the Falcons, it was Vic Beasley, and I don't really remember who was opposite him in that game. And Vic Beasley had a couple good wins against Lane Johnson, but that was a solid battle. This year, you got Tack McKinley, rookie out of UCLA, who's been coming along recently. He's been learning more every week. And Beasley, and they've got two guys on two sides. It's a lot harder to protect Vaitai in that situation. Wisniewski, again, being healthy helps. But Vaitai isn't the quickest to recognize. So mentally, on the fly, we've seen that he's lost to a lot of stunts. And so we'll see the extent to which the Falcons are able to bring those and help screw around with Vaitai's reads and his landmarks, so on and so forth. And then he loses to speed around the edge. He does. He doesn't have great footwork. And, you know, if there's something that Tack McKinley can do, it's beat you with speed around the edge, right? And he's very explosive off the line of scrimmage. And so there's definitely a reason for concern. Now, the thing is, you know, Vaitai has been bumped further and further down the reasons for concern as the season's gone on with the Carson Wentz injury. You know, without that's obviously the biggest thing is making sure Nick Foles can execute the offense. And with the struggling play of the cornerbacks, now it's about making sure that the Eagles have the right safeties in place and that they're getting Danelle Ellerbe on the field so that Malcolm Jenkins can play a little bit further off the ball. All stuff that we've discussed on Locked On Eagles. You know, kind of the Vaitai narrative has been pushed down. It's still a very real thing, but Vaitai's been out there for a while. He has starter experience for the past two seasons, and the Eagles have in place their ways that they help him out. They've been using them for weeks. And so while it is obviously a big drop off in talent, I'm not too concerned with, you know, with the issue situation, just simply because it isn't so fresh. I will ask you though, Aaron, and this is my last one for you, with bringing those stunts, with, you know, potentially bringing blitzes, I'm curious. I wasn't able to find the stat on how often Atlanta blitzes. I'm not as good with Pro Football Focus as Mike is, I'm afraid. But Atlanta, you know, that Dan Quinn style of defense, not known for blitzing at a high percentage. If I had to guess, I'd say they're around probably league average-ish. Do you think they increase that against Philadelphia? You have an inexperienced left side of the line with Vaitai, with Wisniewski, who wasn't the starter coming into the offseason. And you also have a backup quarterback in there. Nick Foles is notoriously poor under pressure. It seems like a good situation to bring the heat. I don't know how often Atlanta does it. Are they going to be willing to do it? Do you anticipate a lot more blitzes coming this weekend?
I think they're near the bottom of the league last I saw the stats. Wow. In terms of the blitzing. They don't blitz a ton. Usually when they do, it's usually just a simple five-man pressure where they'll bring Devontae Campbell off the edge as well, in addition to the four guys up front. What was interesting in that Rams game is they did dial a couple of blitzes early in that first quarter against the Rams. I saw a six-man pressure, which has been a rare occurrence with the Falcons this season to start things off. And so I do feel like this team is a lot more comfortable with their ability to blitz. You know, Campbell had a couple of hits on Jared Goff last week with those blitzes. The stunts, I think, is going to be a big part because Vic Beasley has not had quite the season that he had a year ago. And for the most part, most of his pressures and most of his sacks this season have come predominantly from, you know, hustle plays or off of twists and stunts going up against Lane Johnson because Beasley rushes from that left side. I don't expect him to have a lot of success on Sunday. I think Tack McKinley and Adrian Claiborne are really their two best edge rushers at this point. But when Beasley's in the game, when they throw stunts at teams, and it's been generally effective. So I do expect them to do that a number of times to sort of create opportunities against Nick Foles and that Eagles offensive line. As you said, the right side of that offensive line is pretty good. Jason Kelce had a really effective game against Grady Jarrett a year ago, and looking at him and Brandon Brooks, those two guys are two guys that I think could really give the Falcons some troubles, particularly in the run game, particularly if Kelce can get out in space. And, you know, he's probably the most athletic. He's the only guy that makes Alec Mack look unathletic.
Yeah. Yeah.
As, at the center position. So, yeah, I think, you know, the Falcons will be aggressive because I think they've been fairly confident throughout the season that they're back on the back end, that they can cover anybody. I think guys like Aguilar and Zach Ertz could give them a little bit of trouble just because of how sort of savvy and quick they are. Aguilar, you know, going up against slot corner Brian Poole is not the fastest guy in the world. I think that could create some issues for the Falcons on the back end. So maybe they'll be a little bit less willing to go pure man cover one like they often do, and you know, play a little bit more cover three zone. And if that's the case, then they probably won't be as aggressive throwing those blitzes at the Eagles this weekend.
Yeah, and I just looked it up. Devondre Campbell would be the one we need to look for as far as pass rushing from the linebacker position. He's the outside linebacker. 549 snaps for pass rush snaps, 76 rushes there. He's actually got a PRP or a pass rush productivity rating of 11.5, 11 pressures, two sacks. So he's the guy. The next one is like 15 pass rush snaps for Deion Jones. So they're really not mixing it up as far as their linebackers, which is kind of what Aaron alluded to. Aaron, man, we have to get a prediction from you before we end this. How do you see this game going? What's the score? Who wins?
I think this is going to be a low-scoring game. I think this is going to be probably closer to the Jaguars-Bills game last weekend than necessarily the Saints-Panthers game in terms of the scoring output. My expectation, you know, the interesting thing about the Falcons is they're 11-0 in games where they've scored 20 or more points this year, 0-6 in games where they've scored less than 20. So pretty much their goal is to get to 20 points, and it seems to be their magic number. A year ago, that number was 31 points, which tells you how far they dropped off this season offensively. But, you know, it also speaks to how much they've improved defensively as well. So, my expectation is I think this Eagles defense is for real. I think this will be a slow, conservative game where the two teams feel each other out. I think a special teams big play or a turnover here or there is really going to decide the outcome of the game and give one team's offense a few more opportunities to score. So, long-winded way of basically saying I feel reasonably confident the Falcons will take care of business. I think they have a lot of mojo behind them. Score probably like a 19-16 game, and I think this might be the first win of the season they get scoring under 20 points.
I'm going to throw my prediction out there, and Locked On Eagles listeners, put your hands over your ears, earmuff time. I'm going to go 13-12 Falcons, where the Falcons are up 13. Jeez, man. Let's go 14-12. Two touchdowns for the Falcons, two field goals for the Eagles. They score a touchdown. We'll make it 14-13 Falcons. That's what I'll put it at. Ben, what about you?
Mike, we disagreed one time in the regular season. Do you remember when we disagreed?
Oh, geez. Was it the Rams game?
No, it was the Panthers. Do you remember who you picked to win, Michael?
Who I picked to win? Didn't I pick the Panthers to win?
Yes, and were you correct or were you incorrect?
I was incorrect, so I'm trying to go to the well one more time, brother.
Yeah, so I'm taking Philadelphia. I do think that they have a good chance to win. I don't want to not take Philly, let's put it that way. I think they have a good chance to win. I think they're at home. I think the bye week of rest would be a good reset opportunity for them. Obviously, Foles has not played very well, but if there's anything we know about Foles, he's high variance. And so in my opinion, two bad games of Foles just means a good one's probably coming at some point. Right, that's the way I'm choosing to see it. I'll take Philadelphia 23-20.
Oh man, okay. All right, so you're gonna make me the. All right, fine, Ben. I'll be the bad guy on the show again.
if our relationship is not antagonistic, what is it, man?
Then it's nothing. Absolutely nothing. Aaron, thank you so much for chatting with us, man. It was an absolute blast. Go follow Locked On Eagles listeners. Go follow at Locked On Eagles. Go follow Aaron Freeman on Twitter. Aaron, what's your Twitter handle one more time?
I am at FalcFans, FalcFans.
Beautiful. Nice. I've been Michael Kist at Michael Kist NFL with my co-host, the best doggone co-host in the game, Benjamin Solak. Follow him at Benjamin Solak. That's Solak. Fly, Eagles, fly, man. Fly, Eagles, fly. That's how we're ending this, Aaron.
Rise up.
Rise up. I love it. How are we going, man?
Take it easy.
All right. You too.